All right, everybody, welcome to the Dylan Gemelli podcast. And today I have a very, very special guest to bring to you. Today I want you to meet Dr. Michael Palmieri.
Hey, Dylan, how are you?
I'm good, brother. Thanks for taking the time today. I know you're busy and we really appreciate it.
I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be a blast.
Awesome. All right, guys, I'm going to let Michael kind of talk about his business, but just a quick intro. I had the absolute pleasure of meeting Michael here at the Mr. Olympia a little over a week ago. It was a great experience, and he was doing the Mr. Olympia University there. But Dr. Michael is actually the director of research and performance at the Dominate Your Game Elite Wellness Science Facility, and he's in Las Vegas. So I'm going to let him kind of talk to you about it because we got into it and I got super excited and kept him on the phone too long the other day. So Michael, go ahead and tell everybody about what you do and Dominate Your Game and everything about it.
Okay. I can't believe the Olympia's already been that long ago.
I know.
Just whoosh, flash by us. The whole thing was all that time leading up to it, then gone, you know?
So
Dominate Your Game, we're based in Las Vegas. We started back in about 2005. Our original goal was to work with elite tier one professional athletes, you know, the less than 1% of athletes in the world. And our goal was basically to provide all of the services that accessorize their skills. So let's say you're a quarterback, you work with your quarterback coach to work with your quarterback skills. And we try taking care of everything else. And to that end, I built quite a team, a staff, to do this. So we have, of course, we have a performance team, and these are our strength conditioning coaches and our performance experts and stuff like that. We have a sports medicine team, that includes, our chiropractor, our physical therapists, athletic trainers, massage therapists. And then we have a nutrition department, and that's our dietitians and our chef. And my department that I run, I guess you could say, is the most of the research and the testing. I'm the big nerd of the group, and my group, we conduct all of the testing on the athletes, on our clients. So whether it's physiological testing or biomechanical testing or whatever they're looking at doing, run faster, hit harder, jump higher, whatever. That's where we come into it. So we try taking care of all the different aspects of the athlete's performance. I've had clients call us their toolbox. You know, they just reach in and grab what they need when they're in a need, you know, if they get hurt or if they need to improve or whatever the case may be. And we started out with that, like I said, 2005, and worked really well, obviously. And then during the lockdown we had a few years ago, we were able to stay open because our license, our business license, we were, you know, deemed essential. And so we were able to stay open, and which was great. The only problem is about a third of our clients, we lost about over 30% of our clients because they physically weren't allowed to come to us.
Right.
Because of the lockdown. But what ended up happening completely serendipitously was one of our clients, COO, I think is what she is, of his sports organization, was complaining to him. She has a house here in Las Vegas and was complaining to him that, oh, I can't go train anywhere. She was a big fitness buff, you know, and so she was complaining that she can't train and she can't do this, can't get her massages, blah, blah, blah. And so he said, well, I could, you know, talk to my people and see if they can help out. So she came in and she loved the place. And we basically, I'm sure you realize that when it comes to mentality, there isn't much of a difference in mindset between a C-suite executive and an elite tier one athlete. Their mindsets are very, you know, focused like a laser beam. We got to get this done. Nothing else matters. Put everything into it and sleep when you're dead. And and so she loved it. So we basically treated her just like that. Next thing you know, more than 30% of our business now, probably closer to 40, are C-suite executives.
Wow.
Because they understand, they come in here. We are a completely private facility. We're not open to the public. So they come in here, we work with people one-on-one, and they can come in here and they're not disturbed, they're not bothered. They come in here, they get their work done. We, like I said, we provide everything they need. We, our dietitians will put their meals, our chefs cook it for them, they can take them home. Our massage therapists work on it. Everything is catered to them. And so we started off doing that, and ever since then, it's just kind of gotten bigger. So it's kind of where we're at right now, and we're going to be expanding things. I'm not sure if you want to go into that now or later. I wasn't sure, but we're expanding things now into offering even more to people because there's such a need. And so that's where we're at right now.
When you said that it's private, so how does one become a client, or what does one have to do to get involved with you?
Most of our clients are referrals.
Okay.
We can't really advertise this business. I mean, I haven't been able to, I remember when I first started out, I went through like four or five different marketing companies. I'm trying to figure out how to market this company, you know, and you can blow $15,000 on TV commercials for a few weeks and not get anything out of it. You know, where is that? What are you aiming at? And I remember one of my clients told me, he said, "Do you ever wonder why you never see a commercial on TV for a Lamborghini?" I'm like, "Yeah, you never do, do you?" He goes, "You know why?" I go, "You know what?" He goes, "You know why?" I go, "Why?" He goes, "Because the people who drive them aren't sitting on their couch watching TV."
Yeah, good point.
Okay.
Very good point.
So I'm like, all right, good point. So most of our business is referrals. And if it's somebody that comes to us from a referral, they come in, we talk to them, we find out what they need. And they go through a whole process of meeting with our staff on depending on whatever their goals are. Otherwise, people can contact us. Obviously, we're on social media. We have a website. And if they contact us, if they're not a referral, we go through an interview process with them, and that determines if they're going to match what we do and we're going to be a good fit for them, and that if they something, you know, if they're going to get something out of it. So,
right. Well, yeah, because this clearly isn't for everybody, and it's not some kind of random 24-hour fitness or whatever.
Oh, God, no.
So it's totally different. And I think people, what intrigued me the most was the difference. Levels of what you did and how you worked. Like when you said you do the nerdy side of it, that's like, I guess I'm a nerd too, because I love that side of it. But there's so many different levels, and that people are looking for and don't know anything like this exists. And that's one of the big reasons I wanted to get you on here, was to really explain how intricate it is that what you do and what you analyze and what you're able to do there, because I hate this word, I really do, but it's almost like an underground thing, like what I do when I educate. You know, and it's a shitty word because it shouldn't be underground, but right. I don't know how else to phrase it, because that's kind of what it is, because it doesn't have to be hidden legally, but it kind of has to be hidden, right?
You know, I think one of my NFL guys put it best. He calls our building a nondescript CIA building.
Right.
Nondescript. Maybe that's better than underground, you know? But it works either way.
So you guys, I mean, essentially, aside from the obvious with the diet, the training, do you guys analyze blood work? You talk about testosterone. Yeah. You talk about cycles. Like, what, if you don't want to get into it too deep, that's fine. But, you know, what kind of things do you offer, and what kind of things do you do? And I guess I'm curious, because I'm not going to ask you who goes there, but do you do NDAs so people can keep it? You know,
yeah,
sure.
And you know, most of my staff are considered healthcare providers by the state of Nevada, right? So our physical therapists, our dietitians, they're all licensed through the state of Nevada,
right?
And so they are bound by HIPAA regulations, obviously, when it comes to, you know, medical records and those types of things. People like me, obviously, I don't have that type of licensure, but every staff member signs an NDA. Some of our clients will come in here, ask to see them. Most of them don't care. They trust us because of our reputation. We have the reputation. We've never been a company that, you know, takes our selfies with our clients and posts them on social media. And that's that has actually been in our reputation, that they people can come to us with a concern and we can treat it and no one's going to know about it. And that's really we want to keep that very, very high level of discretion. And so we all have NDAs. And what I mentioned earlier, how we were kind of what you just brought up kind of goes back to what I mentioned earlier, is how we've are in the process of this year of expanding our services, that we're providing to people. Again, as a result, a lot of things that happened after the lockdown, we started getting contacts, from people who wanted our services that weren't necessarily elite athletes or C-suite executives. And they were like, my doctor says I need to go see a dietitian, but I can't get into seeing one and my insurance doesn't cover it. So can I just pay you guys cash and come see you guys? Or they'll come in and say, I just had knee surgery. I got a couple of PT sessions. I need more. Can I just pay cash and come see you guys? And so what we started seeing was people wanting to really, people start really becoming more concerned with their own health after the whole corona thing, and kind of taking charge of their health more on their own versus relying on somebody else or some other agency to do it for them.
Sure.
And we, you know, we go online and we see the experts that are out there and telling people things and influencers and they have their little $50 online certification and they're deemed experts, and these people that are hiring them are getting hurt or nothing's happening and they're wasting a lot of money. And I said, I talked to my staff and I said, look, we have all of the expertise. We have the education and the experience, the real-world application, just from the level of people that we work with. I mean, it's easier to take something that you learn working with an elite level athlete and trickle it down to us mere mortals.
Right.
Okay. So you can't take somebody who is a weekend warrior and then trickle it up to somebody who is a first round draft pick. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, but you go the other direction. And so I'm like, well, we have all this experience. We have the education. We have the practical applicability. Maybe this is something that people need. So we started doing some market research. We started doing some interest groups. And we started seeing that people really were wanting to take care of their health more at a preventative level. And right now, we have really two camps in the medical community. You have the group of reactive treatment of symptoms and the proactive treatment of causes or prevention. And this group over here doesn't get as much liking as just treating of symptoms, but you have more people wanting to go over there and they can't do it. There you have doctors now that they see 80 people a day. Okay, that's 2 minutes a person. Okay, that's and they're yep. complaining. We have our own group of physicians that we work with, that we have vetted, that we use for our clients, a cardiologist, neurologist, et cetera. And most of them are going to cash pay or concierge services because they can't handle dealing with the insurance anymore and not being able to treat people the way they want to treat them. They can't practice. And so I'm like, okay, so this is something we need to do. And we saw the demand for it, particularly in the longevity and the anti-aging and the wellness spectrum. And so we already have an endocrinologist that we work with our clients.
Excellent.
We have a couple of nurse practitioners that specialize in certain longevity treatments. And I said, you know what, guys, let's add on to our business model and start offering this to the public.
Yeah.
And it's we just started implementing it. It took a long time to get our insurance coverage and all that done because of everything that's included with it. And we just started offering, and internally we call it being a badass. You know, what do you want to do to be a badass? Let's you know, let's say I'm 55 years old. And I want to go play golf every other weekend, right? Something right. like that. I just want to feel good about my life. I want to take care of myself. I want to be functional. I want to be able to play with my kids. I want to be that person, male or female, you know? And I'm not getting that in the regular healthcare industry right now. It's just not there. Everything is stick a Band-Aid on it, take this pill and take this pill for that pill. Right.
Yeah.
And so we want to change that and we're doing it. And so now we have, like I said, between our physicians and our nurse practitioners, including the rest of our normal staff, our rest of our sports medicine, our athletic trainers, our dietitians. So basically, like, let's say you have some guy who has low testosterone levels.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're going through all the symptoms. And we understand this. And this is something that you have to find the right-brained physician to get this. You look at, they keep changing the levels of total testosterone, what's an acceptable range, right? So now I think they dropped it down to like 700 now at the top end.
It's ridiculous.
Okay? Which is not even, it used to be like 1,000, it used to be 1,050, it used to be 1,100. Now it's down to 700. And I guess the reasoning behind that is, well, that's the new average because men our testosterone levels are lower than our grandfathers were more of a man than we were, right?
Absolutely.
Even our sperm count's down by 60% in the last, 30 or 40 years. And so, so the doctor will say, well, you have a 400 level testosterone, so you're fine. Well, no, I'm not, okay? Let's forget about the sexual problems with it. I'm not even talking that. I'm talking I can't sleep. I'm crying at Cheerios commercials. I'm at risk of bone deterioration. My nerves start not functioning the way they're supposed to. All these things. I don't feel good.
Right.
So you have a quantitative and a qualitative. The quantitative says, here's the number. This is good. The qualitative says, how do you feel? We put the two together. Okay, so they meet with our endocrinologist. Endocrinologist says, okay, we're going to start you on a TRT program. Great. The rest of the country, that's where it ends. You get your prescription, and you're off, and have a good day. Here, they get their prescription, if they need it. They get their training program. They get their diet and nutrition. They get everything, because I don't care how much testosterone you're on, you still have to train, you still have to eat, you still have to do all these things. I mean, how many fat guys do you see wandering around with the big swollen watermelon bellies, you know, and pinky sized arms? Oh, I'm on testosterone. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, you still gotta work. It just helps you be more normal. The same thing goes for women. We had a client that was having some hormonal issues at a young age, and her doctor was like, well, that's just part of getting old. You're going to get fat and you're going to get weaker and you're going to, and she's like, I'm not that old yet. I'm still in my 30s. What are you talking about? So we sent her to our endocrinologist. This sad story. She walked into the endo, and he spent 45 minutes with her. Because she just lost it, just started bawling. I can't do this. Okay, so he does the blood work. Her estrogen is through the roof, okay? Her progesterone or testosterone are not even measurable. They're so low.
Wow. Okay?
Now, turns out she had some other issues going on that he was able to treat, sent her to the appropriate doctors. We took care of her. And in a four-month period, she's normal. She's fine. She's great. She's living life. She's loving life. She's having a great time. That's what we want to do. And I don't see the reason of why people's health has to be put at risk because of what the standards are or what the insurance company says or anything like that. These are all FDA approved treatments. None of this stuff is shadowy, outside, you know, scary stuff that we can't be talking about. This is all accepted stuff. It's just that nobody's doing it.
Right.
And when it comes to certain levels of stem cells, when it comes to like ozone treatment, when it comes to, well, peptides are going to be out the window here in a bit, unfortunately. you know, red light therapy, all these things that are accepted stuff. Why aren't we doing it? Well, because they don't generate enough money for the insurance company. And anyway, that's a whole other issue. I'll get off on that. So that's what we started doing. And it's doing very well. There are a lot of people out there that want to take care of themselves, want to be functional, want to be living, normal, breathing human beings. And now we're going to be able to help them. So that's a long answer to a short question.
That's okay. No, that was super insightful. I got a couple things I want to throw by you to kind of come back at you on what you said, and for the audience to just kind of feed off everything you said, because there's a lot of good things that you're doing. So just real quick on the first one, you brought up the, I just did a video on this and you happened to bring it up, was the influencers out there and how to not listen to them. And like you said, they can get a certification for $50 online that is a Cracker Jack box certification that you can get by sitting online, looking up the answers and typing them in. That is not a certification of shit. Okay. And so for people, like if you're looking at people, you need to go to somebody that's actually certified, check the credentials, check the credibility in NASM and ACSM and ACE. Those are highly accredited. When you can't find something you're looking up, or people that haven't been to college or studied this. So secondly, when you talked about the endocrinologist, I think that this is important for people if you don't understand and how important it is what Michael has as opposed to other people. An endocrinologist is actually somebody that is an actual doctor for things like low testosterone, okay? It's not like going to your family doctor, like what you were talking about with that woman. If you go to a doctor, and like you said, they see you for a couple minutes, and half the time the answer is just ibuprofen or amoxicillin or whatever. Sure. That's going to fuck everything.
An antidepressant.
Yeah.
You're right. A statin. Those are just the standard drugs. You got to get on a statin. You got to get on an antidepressant. You got to get on high blood pressure medicine. But
whatever makes them the most money and the insurance company wants to sell. And so for them to have an actual endocrinologist, you're not going to an anti-aging clinic where they just want to write you a script, even with a 700 testosterone level, just to put you on something. Right. If they have a real true professional that knows what they're doing. And then lastly, I will argue, and we don't have to get into this too much, but when you were talking about the standard levels of testosterone changing, I would also argue to come on to what you said, which is all fact. And diet plays a lot in that, and laziness, and that drops testosterone levels. But I would argue that our government wants that as well, because they want less masculine men. And absolutely, they do. It's a damn fact. And just like they changed the definition of recession or definition of whatever the hell they want, they want that because they don't want men as masculine and they don't want strong men. And one of the things that you said also is now – the acceptable testosterone range is like 215 or 230, depending on if you go to Quest or LabCorp or whatever, but it's in that range. Dude, that is so dangerously low. That's not just kind of like 400. Okay, we could argue. Some people feel horrible. Some people feel great. But when you start getting in the 200s, your quality of life is gone. It's gone.
Correct. Absolutely. I mean, I think I'm going off the top of my head, but I think the range for chemical castration is like 120 or something like that, right?
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, we've had guys come in here with 80 or 90, okay? Yeah, and we had a standing joke because estrogen, he was more of a woman than his wife was because his estrogen levels were higher. And you also have to worry about too, going back to your first point about the endocrinologist. 95% of endocrinologists out there right now are very well versed on type 2 diabetes because we have this obesity epidemic, which contributes to type 2 diabetes. And so that's where the insurance and the money is, stuff like that. There's very few of them that deal well with thyroid issues, you know, your T3s and T4s, for example, and sex hormones. And so they don't understand, you know, the relationship of estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, for an example, or looking at your sex hormone binding globulin and those types of things. They don't understand that because that's not what they're focused on, because that's not where the money is.
Right.
And again, I can't lay all the blame at the feet of the physicians when they have so much on top of them coming from the insurance industry and the FDA. And it's very hard. One of the things that I really, really hated, what you're talking about with testosterone levels. One of the worst things, there were so many bad things that came out of our whole corona thing. One of the worst things I heard was trust the science. Okay.
Ugh, fuck.
Okay. All right. People like, well, you know, what do you know? You know, I go, actually, I am a research scientist. Okay. That is my, I have a PhD. This is the shit I do. I'm sorry. this is the stuff I do. Okay. And one of the things that you learn when you go into any science field, whether it's the physical science, like chemistry, physics, or biology, or social science, like sociology or psychology, the standard is the same. The goal of science is to question the outcome of what you're observing. That's it. And so for anybody to come and tell you, well, you just need to trust this because that's what the science says, screw you. No, I need to review it. And then I'll make the decision. When I was working on my master's, one of my professors used to tell me, and it stayed with me all these years. She used to say, never take as gospel the numbers that come out of your little black box. Okay? And that she meant any type of testing equipment. This up here is the final determining factor on what is qualified as legitimate or not. You have to interpret it. And you don't have to be a scientist to do that. You can look at something and say, hey, you know what? That doesn't make sense. I'm gonna look into it further. That's an act of brain. That's an act of research, okay? Not accepting stuff blindly. They said that they're lowering our testosterone levels because that's the new accept, those our testosterone levels are now lower. Okay. Then let me go ahead and extrapolate that and bring it out forward to some other numbers that are very vital to us. Okay, blood sugars. Okay, so right now we're at a pandemic level of type 2 diabetes and obesity, okay? All right, type 2 diabetes. Okay, so people have a resting higher blood sugar level, higher than it ever has been before in the history of humankind. We've been taking records. Okay, so maybe what we should do is elevate the normal resting blood sugar to something higher because that's the new normal.
Right.
That makes no freaking sense. Ugh. All right. Same thing with blood pressure. Okay. 120 over 70 is your textbook. Yeah. But you know, resting blood pressure has gone up a lot over the last couple of decades because of a lot of reasons, including obesity. So we're going to say that the new resting blood pressure is XX number because it's higher and that's what's more normal.
Right.
That makes no freaking sense.
None.
So why are we doing that with testosterone?
Ooh, motive.
They can't answer it.
Pure motive. And just like everything else. And it drives me crazy. And it just doesn't make any sense. And every point you brought up is on the money. And you could argue that for so many things, yet none of them change except what they fucking want to change.
And that's exactly.
And it's just disgusting and actually despicable because I swear people don't understand that low testosterone can cause low quality of life. But if it's bad, it can fucking kill you. Like literally.
Yes, there is now research coming out, and if anybody questions you about this, I'll send them I can cite the references off the top of my head, I can't. But there's certain research that's come out recently that shows normal testosterone levels actually lend to better cardiac health.
Okay? Yes.
Because we got one study that came out 10 years ago that was a horribly constructed study. I've read it. It was a bad study from the get-go, and it said, taking testosterone will increase your risk of a heart attack, okay? That makes no sense because we already have testosterone in us, men and women.
Right. Okay?
So if I'm at a normal level, then how's that going to increase my risk of a heart attack? It never made sense to me. Now we have research coming out saying, well, when you have normal testosterone levels, you actually are at a better chance of better cardiac health than if you have low levels of testosterone. Actually showed a significant increase in cardiac incidence.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh,
crazy.
Okay. How about bone density? Okay. This is interesting. You go to your primary care doctor. If you're a man over the age of 40, you're supposed to get a bone density test done every couple of years. Why is that? Ask them. They'll say, well, because your testosterone levels drop. Okay. If my testosterone levels drop, maybe we should do something about increasing them back to normal. Well, yeah. No, what they'd rather do is wait for your bone density to go down, then stick you on another medication in order to do that so you don't break bones. And then you die at 60 years old from a hip fracture because you fall over. Okay? Same thing. Now we're seeing stuff with, this is something, this just came out, probably about 2 years ago. There is research coming out now, and they haven't conclusively figured out the connection yet, but there is a connection somehow between people who have developed multiple sclerosis and low testosterone.
I believe it.
Okay. Now, we know with multiple sclerosis how the nerves start unraveling, and that's where the problems come in. That's where, to keep it simple. So the electrical impulses don't travel normally. It's like taking an extension cord and fraying it, right? It doesn't travel electricity better. Okay. They think there may be something there because we know that women tend to be diagnosed with multiple sclerosis earlier in life. Men, the average age is 35 years old. Well, guess when our testosterone levels start really dropping, early to mid 30s.
Right.
Okay. And so they started this whole research on that. And so all these things are coming out. And now I'm not talking levels that are through the roof that you see at professional athletes levels. I'm not talking a testosterone level of 2,000 or 3,000. Okay. That's something entirely different. I'm talking normal, functional, healthy, well-being levels of hormones. You have a woman come in, they have estrogen issues, they have progesterone issues. What's the first thing they put them on? Birth control or more estrogen? Okay. Why? Their estrogen is already through the roof. Why are we doing this? So that is why we started doing what we're doing. That's why we started the Badass program here at DYG. And because there was a definite need for it, and there is a definite need for it. And we want to be able to provide this, and people want it. People just want to take their own control of their own health. They don't want to rely on the government or other people or insurance companies to take care of them for themselves. They want to go out and do their own. And so far, so good.
And, there's a couple things here, too, is that a lot of this gets villainized and they want it to look like steroid use or something like that's like it's a gateway drug. I mean, there's so many things of nonsensical bullshit that they put out there when in reality, this is one of the longest lingering issues, I would say, probably the last 20 years, more, where this has been going on. It's getting worse and worse. And as you see by the lowered numbers of testosterone, we're starting to see it's an ongoing issue. And I think on top of that, too, and one of the important things about having somebody like you or somebody that actually understands the what goes into TRT, people just look at total testosterone numbers and they're missing the whole point here because there's so much more to it. Your free testosterone is really the number that you want to look at. And you brought up SHBG. With an elevated SHBG, your free testosterone is going to be bound up and it's going to drop, which is going to, even if you fix your total T, that's still going to cause you problems. Yep. And so that's something. Pregnenolone, progesterone, like you had said, estradiol needs to be checked. Yep. T4, TSH, you want to check your A1C, iron panels, liver panels, all of this stuff goes in to it. And people don't understand that. They look at one number, and even like some doctors, they'll look at that and they don't factor in anything else. And
no, and a lot of them are connected. Okay.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm still getting over this cold I caught in Orlando. So a lot of them are connected, okay? We know for a fact that if you have, let's say, we're working right now with somebody who's a type 1 diabetic, okay? Somebody, it's completely different. That's your genetic predisposition. Some people say, a lot of the medical community now thinks that type 1 diabetes is actually a type of autoimmune disease. But anyhow, so she's a type 1 diabetic. And we had our physicians, our NPs were taking a look at it because you're looking at the connection between your sex hormones, your thyroid hormones, and your insulin, okay, which is a type of hormone, right? And so there is a connection between all of them. And sometimes you can't tell which is causing what. Now, we know she's a type 1 diabetic. Other than that, my endocrinologist calls it, what did he say? Chicken before the chicken and the egg on domino steroids is what he said. So you don't know which is coming first. And at some point, you just got to stick your hand in the middle of the dominoes pile and stop it. And we have a client that's, we worked at, her thyroid basically does not work at all. Okay. It doesn't function. She has what's called Hashimoto's disease, which is a type of autoimmune disease that affects the thyroid, right? Okay. So now there's this huge connection between what her thyroid was or was not doing and her sex hormones. Okay. Because they are not communicating the way they're normally supposed to.
Right.
And so you need somebody to look at that and say, okay, it's not just A or B or C. It's all of it. It's all of it. And as a result of that, you do still need to have a good diet and nutrition. You still have to eat the right way. You still need to exercise. That's all going to help things. You put somebody on a good, solid nutritional program, good, solid exercise program, and we start seeing the possible need of some of these other medications decreasing.
Yes.
Because the body becomes more efficient. The body becomes better at what it does. Okay. So it's all tied together. And nobody does that. Nobody opens their eyes. They put these blinders on and they stick their fingers in their ears and they don't look at the entire picture. They only look at one piece, two piece, three piece. Or you have, a cardiologist who looks at that and won't talk to the endocrinologist because there's no communication. There's none of that. We're trying to fix all that, at least for our clients.
That's huge too, because it's not like you go to a doctor and they start breaking down your diet for you and telling you to do this. That they want to put you on medications instead of, and hey, there's some medications are good. I'm not arguing that.
Absolutely. And I'm not jumping on the bandwagon of destroying the pharmaceutical companies, because obviously a lot of good has come out of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But, and it's where it's going now. There is a problem. Doctors don't have time to break this stuff down. Like, when I was a little kid, I remember spending a lot of time with my pediatrician. It was not a 3-minute visit. It was like an hour long.
Yes.
And, it was, and they don't have time for that anymore. And that's why I said so many of our physicians now have gone to cash pay. Our imaging, for example, let's say you talked about blood work before. I'll go back to that real quick. We can order blood work for our clients now. They can come in here, they get it drawn. They don't have to go to a Quest or anything like that to get it drawn. We can order imaging. Okay. We have an agreement with a local imaging company where 99% of our MRIs, with or without contrast, I can get for less than $300.
Jeez. Okay?
All right. Cash pay. And I can usually get them in within a day or two. They're making money. That's why. Okay. Because otherwise, you have to wait 4, 6, 8 weeks for your insurance to approve it, if they approve it. Okay. And you got a $200, $250 copay. So if I pay you $50, $75, or $100 more than I would be paying already, and I can get in a day or two, I'll take it.
All day.
Okay, all day long. So where is the fault? Is that the physician's fault? Is that the pharmaceutical company's fault? No, it's not. There's a lot of broken things in there over the last 10, 12 years that are just multiplying.
Yeah.
And we're trying to do our part in fixing it, at least, like I said, at least privately.
And that's like that's what I call real care. True care, because when I think of care, I don't just think of a doctor giving you a prescription or advice. I'm talking about somebody that actually cares and is taking care of you, which is exactly what you're doing. And to be able to, because I don't think some people understand, even when you go to the doctor and get a prescription or something, the diet and movement and training and taking care of yourself goes into no matter what you do, not just
absolutely
everything. And you can look. I'm not going to put this on everybody because I'm very religious, but God did not provide us with nothing to heal ourselves. Everything's here for us to heal ourselves, and that's why a lot of just taking care of yourself, taking proper vitamins, nutrients, eating right, you can prevent or cure a lot of things on your own. Low testosterone is a whole different story, but there's too much dependence on, like you said, antidepressants and things like that. And everybody just thinks they need one now because that's the answer. And that leads to other problems within yourself too. Just being on an antidepressant can cause you a slew of other problems. And I don't have to get into all that, but it certainly can. And I don't mean that everybody doesn't need it, because there are things, chemical imbalances, right? And things, but
there are legitimate reasons for it. Absolutely.
But I think there's, I would say out of 100% of the things written, over half of them are not necessary, if not probably more than that. And I'm probably being conservative on that. But what you guys do is it's amazing. And it does kind of suck that there's not more people that are able to do that, willing to do it, or do it. Let me ask you this. Do people have to live in Las Vegas, or can they do it like online, or like, you know, get the coaching like that? Or do they have to be in person and have to be there?
One of the things we've already had this set up. There's a bit of an argument going on right now with the FDA and regulating controlled substances like testosterone. Okay,
sure.
So prior to the lockdown, a person had to see physically their healthcare provider at least once before getting a prescription for a controlled substance, and then they could do telemed, and then they'd have to go back and see them every so often. I can't remember the exact number, but I think it was like once every 6 months or twice a year or something like that. Then when the lockdown happened, this wasn't feasible. So the whole telemed industry got huge.
Right.
And so you started having people where they were just conversing like we are right now on camera with their physician or their healthcare provider. And they were able to go and they were able to do it, and they got their telehealth and stuff. Like, well, now the FDA is saying, well, that's all said and done, so we're going to go back to the way it used to be. The problem that they had now is not so much the people who are on testosterone, but also people who are on controlled substances for some mental illnesses. Okay. And so that was a bigger concern, because we have people that have legitimate issues with certain mental illnesses, and you know, they're not able to get into see a physician all the time. And so it was able, they tabled it for now. The FDA has basically said, okay, we're not going to go back to enforcing that for a while. We're going to revisit and figure out a way to do it. So as a result, testosterone was able to kind of sneak in there.
Right.
Right now, so us, we've already been set up to where you're going to meet with your healthcare provider here in person. Excuse me. And then we can do stuff virtually after that. We are sticking right now with doing stuff here in Las Vegas for people who live in the state of Nevada, mostly because of a licensing issue. However, what we did also create was a program. We call it a multi-day retreat. And what it allows people to do is they're able to come into town, they fly into Las Vegas, we provide hotel and transportation for them.
Oh, wow.
They stay here for a minimum of 3 days. It usually averages about five. Minimum of 3 days. And we provide all of the services that we normally do at our high-end concierge level that we provide for our high-end clients, where we take care of everything, like I said. And basically, they come in, they get to meet with their healthcare provider, they meet with their dietitian, they meet with their performance expert. They meet with massage therapy, whatever they need, get their meals done for them, our chef cooks for them, the whole nine yards.
Wow.
And after those couple of days, they fly back to wherever they're from, and they can stay in touch with us virtually.
Sweet.
So either over the computer or over the phone. And then every couple of months, every several months, they fly back in and we reevaluate them again, and everything's done here in person. It sounds like it's an expensive thing, but in all actuality, for everything you get, it's really not. And
right.
it's something that people put into it. I mean, how much money now, because this is ridiculous, how much money now is a couple spend when they go to Disneyland for a weekend, right? So let me just say that what you spend on average in Disneyland for a weekend is more expensive than what we charge.
Right.
And we're talking about your health and your independence. I think that really is the biggest thing here. Is your independence and your longevity. I've had people say, you know, why do you do this? Why are you concerned about this? We're all going to die anyway. I agree. But I want to die being an old man, being able to carry my own groceries up the stairs.
Exactly. Right?
If I die at 60 and I'm still carrying my own groceries, I'm good with that versus 95 connected to a whole bunch of tubes.
Right.
Okay. And it's a quality versus quantity again. And that's what we're offering people. We're offering that ability to be independent, to have longevity, to have wellness, and to enjoy your life. This life is the single most fascinating, precious miracle in the universe. I mean, nobody can explain it, whether you are a religious person or not. Even if you're an atheist, life happened. We don't know. There's no spark. What created it, right? So it's so special. So instead of making yourself miserable day in and day out and doing a grind that's not getting anywhere, and you're feeling like ass all the time, and you're not able to spend time with your family, and blah, 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 take care of yourself. Simple treatments. In a matter of a couple of months, you're good. And all of a sudden, you get to enjoy life again.
I agree.
Don't think that's a big problem.
No, and I swear that what you said, if somebody said that to me, I'd be very hard-pressed to not flip shit on them about, oh, you're going to die anyway. Like, what? I mean, think about quality of life in everything you do, whether you have a family or not. And most people do, and I'm not saying everybody does, but don't you want to be able to, with your kids, your grandkids, your family, your wife, whatever the case may be, your parents, to be able to function, to be happy, to do everything, and then go through life waking up feeling good, right? I mean, quality of life should be absolutely the most important aspect.
Yes, and the reason being is there's a couple of conflicting philosophies of thought out there. You know, everyone, we're pushed right now to be altruistic, okay? We're pushed that we have to sacrifice everything for us for somebody else in order to be a good person. And I've never believed that. I've always believed in more of an objectivist point of view, which is this. You take your God-given talent, whatever makes you the best, and you work at making that the best possible it is. I don't care what it is, whatever Absolutely. Your talent is, because then when you take care of your health, you take care of your job, your skills, whatever that is, all of those things that you take and you maximize, now everybody around you, including the rest of society, benefits.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Because I'm at my peak. I'm doing the best that I can. My family, my spouse, myself, we're all going to benefit. Okay. If you like volunteering for an organization, for like, say, the Boys and Girls Club, you want to go help the kids out, right? Okay. If you're not taking care of yourself, you're no good to these poor kids.
No.
Okay. And it sounds intuitive, but people are like, oh, I got to sacrifice everything. No, no. Take care of yourself first. Make yourself, I guess, selfish would be is a word for it. I don't like using that because I think it's a little strong, but maybe be a little selfish at first just to take care of yourself, to maximize everything you have. And we're able to help with that. We're able to, if you do all this stuff and you're stuck at something, or you can't get past it, or you have an outlying issue or concern that things are preventing you from being your best, that's where we come in. We started that back in 2005 with our athletes. You doing this, we're helping you to do this, and now we're able to offer to the people who want it or need it.
I love that. Here's my argument about it not being selfish, and I'm going to tell you why. if you don't have self-respect, you can't respect somebody else. If you don't love Absolutely. Yourself, you can't love somebody else. And if you want to, okay, for instance, like I donate money to my church and to the Animal Rescue League, okay? If I don't work my ass off, I don't have anything to donate.
Nope.
Nothing.
Nope.
If I don't set an example for like kids you're talking about and show them like, oh, I take pride in how I look, how I dress, how I come across, how are they going to listen to me if I'm not setting the example? If I am in bad health, if I look like shit and I eat like shit, well, what does that say to them? I don't have any authority to go in and tell somebody you should do this and that if I don't do it myself. Right. It doesn't make sense. There's nothing selfish about doing the proper things for yourself to put you in a position to help other people. Mm-mm. And you can't do that without all the things I just said and all the things that you just said. It doesn't even make sense.
And the only thing that we're running into with that is the increased amount of the victimhood status. I'm not going to step away from this. I'm saying, you know, we're not allowed to want to look good or feel good because it's offensive to other people, because
that's bullshit.
They're not. And, you know, they want to be the perpetual victim. You know what? I don't.
No.
Okay? I don't care how old I get. I want to be self-sufficient. I want to be comfortable in my own skin. You're just being too materialistic. Or, you know, you're body shaming yourself. No, I want to be functional. I want to be healthy. Why? What is the problem? Yes. Again, like you said, we're all going to die, but why do I want to die uncomfortable?
Okay. No.
You know, I mean, it reminds me of I think it was a Viking saying, or I think it was Viking. Maybe it was Roman. I can't remember. Somebody whose men had a lot more testosterone than we do right now. And they said, you know, today is a good day to die, right? I mean, and it's like, I'm good. I'm enjoying my life. I'm enjoying myself. I have my issues. Things are going to hit the fan.
Always.
We all have our problems. We all have our crosses to bear. We all have issues that suck, you know? And yeah. There's an old expression that, you know, be kind to people. You don't know what they're struggling with, no matter how big of a smile they have, right?
Absolutely right.
Okay. So we all have that. So if we're able to minimize some of the stuff that we have control over, because we don't have control over 70% of what goes on around us.
Exactly.
If we're able to control that 30% and maximize it, fuck yeah, I'm going to do that, because the rest of the world's taking a shit. So guess what? I'm going to do what I can and be comfortable.
Like what you said, the people that claim to be the biggest victims are the biggest villains, and the people that act the holiest are the least holy, and the people that have to say these things about how great they are and how bad you are the ones that are doing all the wrong. I guarantee it. I've seen it a million times. You should always take care of yourself first, and then you put yourself in a position to take care of other people, period. Otherwise, you know, you're no good to anybody else.
I saw an interview with LL Cool J several weeks ago, a couple months ago, and he was talking about, and this kind of plays back to what we were talking about with testosterone. He goes, I want to be a good man. I don't want to be I don't want to be a nice man. And the guy in the interview, he goes, what do you mean the difference? He goes, okay. He goes, if you watch, you see a woman get her purse stolen. He goes, and you chase the guy down, you punch him in the face, you get her purse back. You're a good man, but you weren't a nice man. You were not a nice man. You broke his nose. He goes, the best example, he goes, is when you get on an airplane and the flight attendants go through the safety features at the very beginning of the flight. We've all done it.
Sure.
What do they say when the oxygen mask drops out of the roof? Put yours on first before you take care of your kid or your spouse's. Right?
Right.
Take care of yourself first so you can take care of other people.
Exactly.
Okay? That's a great – when he said that, you know, the whole light bulb thing comes on. It's like, absolutely. I got to take care of myself if I want to take care of the people I care about.
A lot of people, like our generation, your generation, his generation, we all grasp that, and we all still live in reality in the real world. And unfortunately, it's not being bred that way anymore. And it's because they want that, and they want weakness, and they want that. And most of us won't stand for it. And the more that we talk about it and project it, people will start to get it. But when you're brainwashed and it's embedded in your head, it's difficult to overcome. So it takes people like us to sit here and talk about it and bring the shit up. So
one of my clients said to me, he said, I think I told you this when I was on the phone with you last week or this week. And I said, you know, one of my clients said, it used to be called conspiracy theories. Now they're called spoiler alerts.
Exactly. I love it.
I guess I'm wearing the tinfoil hat, you know?
Oh, shit. Here, I want to ask you about this now that we're kind of getting into this. So, because I said at the beginning that I was lucky enough to meet you through the Mr. Olympia University, which was so, so, so badass. That roundtable meeting especially was like...
That was pretty sick, wasn't it?
Dude, and I was thinking, I heard I heard at the beginning someone say, and I think it was you... It might have been you or it might have been Michael Coxis that said it could go 3 hours. And I looked at my wife and I was like, oh, shit. Like, and then it started and I was like, I don't even want to move. Aside from it being cold in there, I was like, man, I don't even want to move. You know, this was like, oh, would you kind of discuss what Mr. Olympia University even is and like what your role is in it?
Sure.
And just kind of explain about it, because I'm telling you, guys, women, of anybody out there, this thing is like a pot of gold of information. You have no idea. And I didn't realize some of these minds out there, because I've been doing this so long, Michael, like talking about this, but you kind of feel like you're on an island of your own sometimes. Yep. And you don't realize, because I'm doing videos with no other platform. And to see this platform, I was like, oh my gosh, I want to be a part of this so bad. You know, like, so will you talk about it and kind of just explain what it is, how you got involved, and what goes into it?
So obviously, you know, I told you about our background of my staff and my company. So years, I think it was 2017. We were contacted by the Lorimers, who are the family that used to run the Arnold Sports Festival, right, in Columbus.
Yeah.
And they contacted us, and we went back and forth with them, and they were very interested in providing an education and seminar workshop track for the people attending the Arnold. And they saw, you know, how the expos have changed, how they are changing. You know, there's more events, there's less supplement companies than there used to be, that type of stuff. And education was becoming a big thing. And so we started running the education track out there. It was called Arnold Education, and it went very well. And in 2020, we actually sold out the event. And then the governor in Ohio canceled the expo for the Arnold because of Corona. Bullshit. Well, we were still able to operate. Excuse me, but we lost about more than half of our people didn't show up. So about 2/3, and so we still ran it. And what our goal was to provide an education platform that touched on all of the big facets of the industry, okay? So not just training, but nutrition, rehabilitation, hormones, stuff like that. And we want to be able to provide it where anybody could come in and take something home with them, whether they were, you know, a husband and wife that were just getting into their own health and wellness within the industry, all the way up to a practitioner or a clinician, and they could come in and learn. We were offering CEUs for people for their licensing, for their personal training certification, all that stuff. We were licensed by a couple of certified by a couple places, including one of the state's chiropractor boards approved us for their chiropractors to come and get CEUs out of us, stuff like that. It went really, really well. So then in 2022, we did another event, and the people who ran the Arnold changed hands, and the people who are running it now don't want us there anymore.
Oh.
And I don't know the reasoning behind it. They have a whole other host of issues I'm not going to get into here because it's not my place. They got a lot of other stuff. So then I was put in touch with Dan Solomon, who's the, I believe he's COO or president or something of the Olympia. Jake Wood had just bought the Olympia, taken it over completely. And Dan Solomon is running it. And so we got in touch, and he said, you know, I'm really interested in being able to offer an education track. I picture this whole Olympia University kind of motif and, you know, a bodybuilder holding a diploma, wearing a graduation hat or whatever. And so we talked about it. We kind of hammered out the issues. So last year was the first one we did it here in Las Vegas. And it went over pretty well. And so they invited us back. You know, are you able to do Orlando? Because Orlando is 4,000 miles versus 10 minutes here in Las Vegas. And so I'm like, sure, we'll get everything shipped out there and blah, blah, blah. And we kind of tweaked it a little bit even more. And I learned a lot from this last Olympia on how we're going to make 2024 even better. Now, of course, it's coming back here to Las Vegas in next October, which I am so happy about because I love the Olympia has been out here in Las Vegas since 99.
Yeah.
Used to always be held in October when it was over at Mandalay Bay. This was always a great thing. It was the same weekend as the weekend before Halloween it used to be.
And I remember. So
it was just freak central. It was great. I loved it. So now it's going to be like the middle of October, which is fantastic. The weather is great out here. It's always in the 80s.
Yep.
It's just beautiful. And it's this year is going to be the 2024 is the 60th anniversary of the Olympia, right? And so they're really planning a whole bunch of stuff. And so we learned a lot from this one, even more on how to do it. And so the round tables that we presented, the one that you got to see, that was our second round table for the day. And it went over so well.
It was great. I mean,
how often are you able to sit down with the know-it-alls of the industry, whatever particular part of it you are in, and one-on-one ask them questions? That crap like that would cost you $500 an hour if you went and did it on, you know, online somewhere and tried hiring them, right? And so we did that, and we had all different parts of it. We had physicians, of course, we had coaches, we had lawyers, we had nurse practitioners, we had all these different people, athletes, and all of these things. So you get all these different perspectives on it. One of the things that I thought we, I don't know if you saw our first roundtable, the regenerative therapies roundtable. In that roundtable, we talked about like stem cells, red light therapy, some other supplements, some different things like that. And what came to the conclusion of it was really interesting. At the end of the roundtable, we all concluded, the table did, that none of these therapies are going to mean jack shit if you're not eating and training right.
Absolutely right.
And these are all just things that help you along. And so these are the experts telling you this. Okay, these are the people that know this stuff. And then we had some other seminars where they were just, you could just sit and listen to certain topics. And again, we tried covering a broad spectrum of topics, from, like I said, nutrition, training, rehab, whatever the case may be. And so we wanted to be able to do that. We were in a much better location this year. We got a lot of people interested. I heard this a lot, and we've had some conversations since then. We're going to have a meeting. But basically I heard this, oh my God, they came to our booth in the expo and they'd go, oh my God, I so wish I'd known about this. I would have planned for it. Right. So that's where we are right now. And that's what we want to do. We want to be able to provide a platform for people to sit and learn about stuff that they want to know about and not just listen to somebody off of Google, you know, that you find some quote unquote expert, some influencer that really has no background or business talking about it. And actually sit and discuss it with these people. These are real world applications in addition to the education. It's not just, because we have two extremes. I mean, you can have people that are really, really well educated and know dick because they've never applied it practically.
Right.
And you have people who are really, really good on the hands-on stuff, but they don't have the education to back it up.
Right.
So we're trying to do that in the middle. That's what I do here in my facility. I want to be able to have our clients experience the knowledge and the education and the experience along with that practical applicability. And that's what we're trying to do at the Olympia University. So people can come in and take something home, whether it's for themselves or for a client.
Yes. It was really cool to me because it was like, okay, you've got some physicians up here and you've got some real hands-on, like,
yes,
people like myself that are like dig in, have coached people, have done this, have implemented this for so long. And I'm listening to their views, comparing it to the physician's views, seeing the similarities, seeing the differences, the beliefs. And it's fascinating. And it was just, it was humbling in so many ways to me because several of the people up there already had known who I was and hearing so many things that I could tell that sounded similar to my beliefs and my experiences. And it was like, I kept looking at my wife and I kept talking to her about this afterwards, how like much that meant to me to be there. Cause I don't like get super emotional or super like that, but that it brought something different out of me. Cause it's like, this is what I've been working on for so long. And there's, you know, here's part of the problem, Michael. And I don't know how into like the social media side of it you are, the influencer side, but that's been my whole world.
Right.
And there's guys that have a million followers. And I'm not saying they don't know what they're talking about. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying there's a lot of people that have far less followers that don't get the kind of like respect or, you know, camaraderie that they deserve, that know far more than those people, like Dave Lee, for example, absolute genius when he was talking up there. And Allie Gilbert wasn't talking on that one, but somebody like her that has a good following, but not
She was on our first table.
Yes, and I talked to her about that, and she's brilliant, absolutely brilliant, you know. And then having Luke up there that was like hilarious, but still knew it very well what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And then you had Dr. T up there, and that was a totally different perspective, you know. And it was just, it was really, really amazing to be around. And I can't wait for it to go back to Vegas, because I told you I had lived in Vegas for several years, and it has a different feel. It just belongs there.
It does.
Yeah, so this was Orlando's fine, and I'm not going to turn down an opportunity to go to Florida by any stretch, but it's not like going to Vegas.
Oh my God. And a couple of things. Number one, I've only been to Florida a few times, and every time I go, I always swear I'm never going back. It's like when you're 22 years old and you get absolutely hammered and you say, I'm never doing that again.
Yeah.
And it's like I don't do well in that humidity. I was born and raised here in the desert. I'm a desert rat, okay?
Yeah.
And I go out there and I come back with more water in my lungs than the whole state of Nevada. And so, yes, the people out there are great. The facilities were nice. I'm not knocking it. Just the humidity was ridiculous. But having the Olympia University, having an education platform tied to such an amazing event. I mean, this is an official Olympia event, okay? We have permission to use the logos. We have permission to use the term of the word Olympia. These are all trademark, registered trademarks, right? This is an official, to be tied to such, I mean, the pinnacle, right? The Olympia is the World Series of bodybuilding. That's it. That, you cannot get any higher than that, right? Nope. And to be able to be tied to it, that there creates a certain legitimacy in people's brains when they come to it, like saying, wow, okay, these people are actually doing this and they're talking about this. We did on Friday and Saturday at noon, we were actually on stage inside the Olympia Expo with a panel of some of our physicians.
Yep, I was there.
And I moderated it and asked some questions and got going. The comments that came up from people afterwards saying, this is amazing. I never knew doctors thought like this. That was the biggest comment. No, they're out there. They're out there. They are out there. And they're becoming more involved with it because they're seeing what I've seen in developing our program. You have physicians like saying, I want to be able to treat my patients the way I was taught and the way I know. I want to be able to be a doctor.
Right.
And I'm going to go concierge or whatever the case may be. Well, who's more interested in taking care of their health than people who go to expos like this? The gym goers, right? The people who want, just average everyday people that go to the gym a couple times a week and watch what they eat a little bit and don't do some of that excessive stuff and they stay, you know, relatively clean and want to take care of themselves. They just want to take care of themselves. Well, these doctors are seeing them. Best place to go is someplace like the Olympia. That's right. And so now they're like, okay, I preach this to my patients and there's a whole expo for it. And so that legitimacy is tied into it. It helps us a lot instead of people like, because, you know, a lot of times I get people, you know, I used to hear a lot when people first see me, I get one of two reactions. You know, they consider me a meathead. You know, I'm 6'1 and 260 and people like, oh, he's just a meathead. You know, he doesn't know what does he know? He has no, whatever. Okay. They don't know my background. Or I get the other extreme before they see me, before they know anything about me. They'll say, oh, you're just book smart. You've never had to do any of this. No. Okay. Number one, I played baseball. That was my sport. I was a catcher. Okay. People are like, oh, you didn't play football. I go, no, I was a catcher. And they'd be like, oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Right.
And then I competed in powerlifting. I did that. I've done my time in sports. And that's how I started getting into it. I kid you not, completely crazy story on how this happened. My original bachelor's degree, my original BS degree was in physics. Okay.
Really?
Kid you not. No, it's crazy because I don't encourage anybody to pursue that. But that was my original degree. Okay. Now I was still playing sports and stuff. And what I thought, I had this left brain over here. I looked at things from a physics point of view. I looked at force production and being able to accelerate, angular acceleration, stuff like that. When I was playing my sports, I didn't realize it. And I started doing that. How do I improve my performance by improving my positioning or improving my production of force or something, or my power input output? And I started doing that. And then I realized, holy shit, there's a whole industry based on this.
Right?
I'm like, wait, okay. I can either go and do my education and apply it to what I enjoy doing, or I'm going to be working on nuclear subs, because that's really all I can do as a physicist. Okay. So it's like, that was basically it. And so that's when I ended up getting my master's and stuff. I started progressing, pursuing that. And so that's all legitimate. This is all for real stuff. And so when people, you either get one or the other. Oh, what do you know? You're just book smart. Or, hey, what do you know? You're just a meathead. Well, there's a lot of people much smarter than me and much bigger than me, okay, in this industry that are legitimate people, okay? And I'm sorry if people are so short-sighted or so closed-minded that they're still judging people on appearances. Right? Exactly. If you're stupid enough to do that, one of the things I learned living out here in Las Vegas my whole life, and it has served me well, is you never, ever judge somebody by the way they look.
Never.
You could go into the casino out here and see some guy that looks homeless drop $1 million on a baccarat table. Okay.
Yes.
And you have no idea who you're sitting next to at the bar.
No. Okay? Nope.
My uncle, my family moved out here in the early 50s. Okay. So we've been out here for a really, really long time. My uncle used to tell me a story of when he first time he met, he wrote a book actually on being a casino host in the 60s, dealing with the mob and all of that type of stuff. And he told me the first time he met Howard Hughes. Okay. And he told me the same thing. He had no idea who he was at first because he looked like he was homeless.
Right, right.
You know? And then all of a sudden, the money that started coming in, this, that, and the other thing, and he was like, no, never, ever judge somebody. You judge them by their character, by what they do, not by the way they look. And I wish more people would do that, because I think it would cure a whole bunch of our society's problems if we follow the teaching of Dr. King and say, judge them by their character, not by the way they look. I think we would deal a lot, but again, I'm going to step off my soapbox here on that one.
No. You know what, man? I learned that. It's funny that you brought that up and you said the bar. I was bartending and I was 18 or 19. And there was this guy that would come in and he'd sit there in like the dingiest flannel shirt at the end of the bar and whatever. And then it's not like I was rude to him, but I just didn't prioritize him, or I just didn't take him very serious, or, you know, whatever. And just thought, oh, he ain't going to tip me shit. Turns out this guy was like a multi-millionaire, I found out. And like I said, I wasn't mean to him, but I certainly wasn't like going out of my way to help him. And this is just like what you said about the meathead. So what I've run into is, because I was a college basketball player and I modeled for several years, and I'm a cardio guy. I do 10 miles a day, 5 days a week. And my whole thing is I like to stay as lean as possible. And I don't like to, I've gotten really big and I'm not comfortable there. So one of the things that I've run into is, because I'm not 300 fucking pounds, that, oh, why would I listen to you about, even if I'm racked up, six pack, you know, perfect condition, why would you listen to me? This is what some big guys will say. If I'm not this size and whatever, when I have studied and have master's degrees and this and that and every certification known to man and coached professional athletes and done this for a decade. And it's like, you know, and I always let people talk before I judge. I don't look at them. I say, let me hear what you've got to say first and foremost, and see what kind of person you are and what kind of knowledge you've got and what kind of motive that you may or may not have before I make a judgment, right?
Mm-hmm. And absolutely. And we're all guilty of doing that. You know, we're all guilty of judging somebody by the way they look. And you got to catch yourself. Say, no, I need to hear them first.
Yes.
You know, I do. And it's and I agree, because, you know, do you know who Jim Thorpe was?
Yes, I do.
Okay, the greatest athlete in the history of ever, right?
Yes.
Okay. There has only been one of them, of him, okay? To excel, to be the best at whatever particular sport you're in, it is nothing that you can just go from one sport to the next. That doesn't transfer. Being athletic, yes. Okay?
Right.
Being athletic, yes. But, you know, I mean, when we had Bo Jackson back in the 90s, okay, play football and baseball, and he was pretty damn good, okay? But yes, he wasn't a Jim Thorpe, okay? Yeah. And so it is so hard to do that. So we have, like, for example, our chiropractor that we have here, he's a marathon runner. He does marathons and he does Ironman type sports, triathlons, right?
Sure. That's
and he's damn good at it. All right. So people would look at him, they say, well, why would I trust you working on an athlete? Because he is one.
Right.
Okay? How many? Okay. I remember I was watching a Winter Olympics. This was several years ago. I was watching it with my dietitian. We had it on our TV and they were doing cross country skiing. Okay. And they shot the gun and the race started. And we're watching it, and I go, and now. And she's like, what? I go, that's where my heart would explode, 50 feet in. I can't do that. You know how much respect I have for those people for what you do? You think you run 10 miles every day? I would die. There's no way I could do that, okay? It doesn't matter. It's the quality. People come to us, they'll say, like I said, well, I played baseball. It doesn't matter. You've got the mindset of being an athlete, whether it was professional or not. You
right.
put the time in, you put the dedication, you've sacrificed your family, your life and everything to get to where you need to go. That's a different, and that's, like I said, why we started working with C-suite executives. Same mentality. Sacrifice, I don't sleep, I don't eat, for days, I got to get this done.
Yes.
That's their same mentality, okay? And so, yes, that's who you have to trust. So the people that put the work in, that have that type of dedication and commitment, and are responsible for their own outcomes, and they take full responsibility for it. Okay,
absolutely.
If I screwed up, it's all on me. But if I succeed, it's all me. Okay.
Right.
So that's how we have to look at it. And so yes, it's unfortunate that people still do that. But what do you do? We're dealing with humans.
I can't tell you how many times and some of my closest friends were people that I had just judged and thought, I just can't stand this motherfucker. And then literally some of my closest friends turned out to be people I did that to. I'm not even kidding you.
Yep.
And that's why I stopped doing it too, on top of that, because it seems like every time I do that, I end up loving the person that I that I judged like that. Not always, but sometimes. And you have to be so careful doing that. But like you were saying, if somebody's willing to put in real work and you see them doing it, and I'm not just saying what I do is so great. I do it just because I do it, because I've been doing it for so long, because I love cardio.
It's part of your life.
But if I'm willing to spend an hour and a half, 5 days a week doing this, like yesterday, I had to go to the urgent care because I had such a splitting headache and was throwing up. I had some kind of 24-hour virus and bad dehydration. And today, after I slept it off yesterday, I'm doing this with you. I worked all morning. I just did 10 miles before I'm talking to you. And it's okay, I could have sat around the next 3 days and been like, oh, I don't feel good, I don't want to do anything. Or I know that when I got up, as long as I felt good, if I didn't, then it's a different story. But right. As long as I felt good, why the fuck? I could have called you today and said, "Yeah, Michael, I was sick all day yesterday. Let's do it another day." No, this is important to me, and just like everything else is important to me, and I want to go do it. So you would think you would trust in people like that that have that kind of work ethic, and that kind of,
But unfortunately, we've been told over the last several years that having a work ethic and putting the grind in and working hard for something that you want and desire is not good. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a certain motivational person out there that is very big publicly. And, he said one time that, being a man, just, being a person, being a good person, but he's talking about men in general because of he's a guy. He said, is getting up and doing what has to be done, even when you don't want to do it.
Yes, I love that.
That's what makes you successful. If you want to be a successful man or woman, if you want to be successful, you have to get up and say, I feel like ass. I could just stay in this bed. It's so nice and warm and comfortable, and I don't want to leave this morning. And you can do that. Absolutely. 100%. Nobody. That's your choice. That's your decision. Okay. One of my, actually not one of, my favorite band, my favorite musical band is Rush, okay?
Okay.
And they had a line in one of their songs where they, Geddy Lee, lead singer, and he sings, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. Okay? It's all you. Okay? And that's one of the problems I have with a lot of the victimhood mentality, because 80% of stuff that's claimed to be victimhood is your own decision.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay? 100%. They want to take credit for stuff that they do, but if that, that turns out good, but if it turns out shitty, it's somebody else's fault.
Oh, and, man. Oh, everything.
I struck a nerve.
There is a built-in excuse for every failure that people have, and it's always somebody else or something somebody has against them or something to do with themselves. And in reality, I always tell people, it's none of that. It's because you fucking suck at what you do. I don't care who you are, what you look like, where you came from, what you identify as. I'll give you credit when it's due, and I'll tell you, you suck when you suck, period.
You know, I had, I think I may have told you this when we were on the phone. I had a client one time here we're working with, and he was complaining about, he was an NFL player, and he was complaining about a particular game that he had just played recently, and he was saying that the ref calls were really, really bad. The refereeing was really, really bad, and they were all in favor of the other team. It was very hard for him to get anywhere.
Sure.
And, right. I can understand. I said, but when the tables were turned and you were getting calls in favor of you throughout the game, did you complain about it?
No.
And he looked at me. He's like, no. I go, then it's a wash. Quit your bitching.
Yeah.
Okay. The goal of any competition, I'm saying this with sports, but in competition, life in general, I believe is to win so much that you don't leave it to the referees. You don't leave it to the judges.
That's okay? Right.
If you are a boxer or an MMA fighter, okay?
There you go.
If you go to decision, people are going to, the haters are going to hate. They're going to say, oh, well, this is bad, this is bad. Motherfucker, if I knock your ass out or you tap, it's done. That's it. You lost. There is no decision.
We have
here in Vegas the current Stanley Cup champions, right? The Vegas Golden Knights, okay? And it was a hell of a series against Florida Panthers. The last game, game five, when we won the trophy, 9-3 was the final score. Domination doesn't even begin to describe what that game looked like. It was
nine goals. Goals is hard to score in a whole fucking seven-game series for some team.
Right. Nine. Okay. And they were like, the refs, it was puck luck, and the refs favored you guys. I said, no, see, if it was 4-3, you could argue that. It was 3-2. All right. Three times as many points. No, they beat your ass.
Yeah.
Okay. Accept it. And I look at that with sports. If you come out and you leave, you have a massive win and you completely dominate. Our tagline here, dominate your game, our tagline is because somebody has to lose.
Yes.
Okay? Somebody has to lose. And welcome to life. Welcome to real life. It's not fair. It sucks. And you're going to lose. So guess what? You might as well do the best you can, be comfortable in your own skin, and kick as much ass as you possibly can.
That's right.
That's what we need to be doing. And I run outside of this. I don't have enough going on in my life. I run a week-long summer camp for kids every year up in the mountains just outside of Las Vegas. And it's a week-long leadership skill camp for kids, teenagers, middle school and high school kids. And the whole premise is to teach them leadership skills, not necessarily sports, not necessarily like that, but we do close down my office for a week. My whole staff volunteers to go up. We have some of our clients have come up and spoken to the kids, which are just – some of the people that were amazing that would come up and offer to talk to these kids. And the whole idea is it's not just say no to drugs or stay out of gangs or whatever the case may be. No, 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 no. We want you to be productive members of your community. We want you to be leaders. We want you to have so much going on in your life that you don't have time to get hooked up on drugs or get involved in a gang. To make all those bad lifestyle decisions, those poor health choices. And you know, and so Lacey, our dietitian here, she does a workshop on just general healthy eating, you know, stuff you can do and not do. Nothing major. Right. We're not telling them don't eat your hot Cheetos all the time. Okay, that's not what we're saying, but little stuff like that. We have a day where we take him out to, there's a meadows just outside of the campground. And stuff. Now, this camp is at 9,000 feet, okay? Las Vegas is at 2,000 feet.
Right.
Oh, my God. You suck air for the first 3 to 4 days you're up there. You feel like you cannot breathe, right? And so we get these kids out there, and we make them play, you know, flag football and stuff like that. But the workshops, that's what we want to do. We want to teach these kids the responsibility of making your own decisions, making your own choices, and respecting other people's opinions.
Yes.
That one of the things I see really problematic with kids right now, and I'll say adults, which is what makes it worse, because adults are should know better. If you and I have a differing opinion on something, you and I can say, well, we agree to disagree and we move on. Hey, you're still a good guy. We're still friends. Let's go get a beer together.
Yes.
That's what people should be doing. And they're not. It's one extreme or the other. And we're seeing so much of that with these poor kids that are coming into this world. They're going into sports. They have coaches telling them, okay, don't play too well because we don't want to beat the other team that bad. Okay. No, that's no. Not life.
No,
because okay? you're gonna get your ass kicked, and your opponent's not gonna think of that.
No,
okay? So enjoy yourself, live your life, have fun. You don't have to be a dick about it. I'm not saying being a dick. I'm not saying be a jerk about the whole thing.
Right.
But enjoy your life. Okay, do what you can, and accept what's going on, and what you can control it.
Right.
And be a better person.
I totally agree. And when you start doing that and you give an inch, people take a foot, and you let up and you do this and you put yourself in worse positions and you don't learn how to close out and win, period. And that's on all aspects of life. And the real world is fucking cruel, and it isn't rainbows and fucking unicorns every day. And people end up getting out there and learning that and don't know how to handle it, you know? And that's a lot of that is taught in sports. And competition, and it doesn't have to be just be sports. Any competition that you're in, competition is good. It's actually great. It's what fuels life. So
I remember watching an old episode of the original Star Trek series. Okay, and Captain Kirk said something that, you know, we're a species that need obstacles. We have to overcome obstacles. If these obstacles are taken out of our way, we die. We don't thrive. We don't function. And going back to what you said at the beginning about how they want us less masculine, they want us less thinking for ourselves. That's where we're going. All their obstacles, we're taking care of you. We're going to take care of you. Bare minimum, you know, from the womb to the tomb, we're going to take care of you at the bare minimum so you can just sit and exist and be a productive little member and pay our bills. I don't agree with that.
As you can see, I don't think either one of us are fall in line people, and never will be, and it's just not going to happen.
Why is the fact that, you know, if you know you get somebody who just questions something, like I mentioned before about science? Did you remember watching the X-Files, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. So at the end of the theme, they always had, you know, question everything.
Yes.
Okay. All right. No, again, I'm not talking about being a tinfoil wearing hat wearing individual, but I should be allowed to question things sometimes. And if we get into that predicament, that situation where we're heading now, that they don't want, I hate the term, but it's being used against our type of person of just wondering what's going on. You know, oh, you're the whole free thinker. You've been red pilled. You know, and I'm like, no. It just doesn't make sense.
Right.
Okay. Something doesn't make sense. I'm going to ask why.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with questioning authority. It has nothing to do with being red-pilled or any of that bullshit. It's just that, no, there's something fishy in Denmark was the old expression, right? And it's just like, I don't know. It doesn't add up. I'm going to look into that. Okay, now you're not allowed to do that anymore.
There's several red flags to me where I'm just going to disqualify you as a person. If you can't answer a yes or no question with a yes or no answer, you're done. You're disqualified. You might as well go be a politician to me. Number two, if you get angry or upset at just a simple, asking of anything, you're automatically disqualified for me. I don't even want to discuss it with you. I don't want to hear it. And I do not trust you. And I believe absolutely zero that you say, because you want to teach your kids, ask questions so you can learn. And what did philosophers do? And what did people do? They asked as many questions as they could to fucking learn. Okay. And sometimes people are asking not just to throw shade, they're asking because they really want to know the root and the answer. And if you are so caught up in that's just it and that's just it, well, fuck you. It and you're done, because I don't believe a thing you say, and you have less than zero credibility with me. Okay. Period. You have to be able to ask, understand, comprehend, learn, and then come to the conclusion that you want to come to. And if you're wrong, you're going to learn the hard way. Like if I come to the conclusion that you're wrong when you're right, well, guess what? That's on me. But I should be able to ask you anything that I want to ask you, and you give me an answer, and then I get to do what I want with that answer. That's life. And if I pick the wrong answer, it's on me for not listening.
Right. And if you go and you say, if you ask me a question like that, and I say, you know what? I really don't want to answer that. That's an answer.
That's an answer.
At least you got something and say, you know what? I don't feel comfortable. I don't know you well enough to answer that question.
That's fine. Like, what's wrong with that?
But that's legitimate discussion. That's a legitimate communication then. We're talking.
Yeah.
Okay?
Things that are off limits that you're not comfortable answering, or, you know, and that's cool, man. That's why I'm always careful with what I ask, you know, on a personal level or like public level, whatever. But when you can't ask basic questions, it's like, dude, just get the fuck out of here. You're done.
Get away from me.
Yeah.
Get away from me.
Yeah. You're not the kind of person I want to be around, because you're a fucking liar, you know? So
at the start, yes.
Exactly. So, man, this has been so fun, and I'd keep you on here all day if I could. I really would, because I could talk.
you're probably stay.
Well, that's because you're my kind of guy to talk to. So, yeah, this is just awesome. I want to get you back, especially like leading up to the Olympia, or when you got something else coming on, or just to shoot the shit, because this is fucking awesome.
Absolutely. It really is.
You are so my kind of guy, and I'm sure that people watching this are going to love this. Why don't you tell people where they can follow you online, and like your website, so people can kind of get that. And I'll put it in the description too, but go ahead and throw that out there to people now so they can follow you.
So our website is dominateyourgame.com. It's all spelled out, one word, dominateyourgame.com. Our social media is all at dominateyourgame. So our Instagram, stuff like that, it's all at dominateyourgame. It's easy enough. Personally, I don't really do much of the social media stuff. I'm on it because my social media girl insists that I do stuff with her, because it needs to be out there. But my life is private, so I don't have a Facebook page. I don't do anything. I don't like any of that. Right?
No. Perfect.
But, my company is my life. My company is my priority, and so that's it. So dominateyourgame.com. And Google it and everything pops up, but it's our social media is at Dominate Your Game, and of course website dominateyourgame.com.
Yes. And then the Mr. Olympia University on Instagram too, obviously, for Olympia.
Yes. And yeah. Right. And so you can, if you want information on that, you can go to olympiauniversity.com, and that'll take you to the homepage of the event for this past year. And of course it's on Instagram as Mr. Olympia University.
Perfect.
Yeah, we had to put a mister in there because of the real Olympia.
I get it.
College.
Yeah.
So, we had to do that.
That's awesome. Well, Michael, I can't thank you enough for your time. Like I said, this was absolutely, it was probably too fun for me, like I said, because I could just do this all day, but I appreciate it, and I'm sure the audience is going to love it. So once again, thank you so much for your
time. Thank you for having me. I had a blast.
Yes. And I also, besides your time, I want to thank you for what you're doing just in general with Dominate Your Game, with the Olympia University. You're really doing some really like God's work. It's amazing. And it's so beneficial to just health and way of life and everything. So I really want to thank you for that as well.
Well, it's like I said in the beginning, it's a labor of love. It's something, you know, Confucius said one time, find a job that you love and you'll never work a day in your life.
Yes.
Something to that effect, right? And so that's what it is. I love coming to work. I'm here 12 to 14 hours a day. I go home and do some more work, sleep about 3 or 4 hours, and then come back. And I've always done it, and it's just something I enjoy. I enjoy the people. I enjoy my clients. I enjoy interacting with people like you. I enjoy having conversations. I enjoy knowing that there are so many more like-minded people out there that want to be a part of this. And like you said, called it underground, you know, living in the shadows. We keep to ourselves because we don't want to draw attention to ourselves. And it's out there. We're real, we're active, and it's I believe we are in the majority. I think just we're quiet about it because we just look, I wanna pay my bills, I wanna run my business, I wanna spend time with my family. That's my life. That's what I want to do. So everything else, I just let me fly under the radar. I don't care about anything else. So
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you, Michael, and everybody watching. I hope you enjoyed this. Stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Jamelli and Dr. Michael Palmieri signing off.